Well, as I said, it's a great joy to be here with all of you. It's lovely to see the digital faces, the digital faces of many people that we have met over time, and great to get united again, this wonderful community of practitioners. On a personal note, I just want to say that maybe I say this for all the Adams and all the meditations, but Chenrezig is very special to my heart and mind. I can look back and say that the retreats of Chenrezig and the practices and teachings of Chenrezig, empowerments of Chenrezig, have been some of the most important and wonderful times of my life. That is for certain. And I find that Chenrezig appears very clearly and forms such an important part of one's practice in the Vajrayana tradition. It also should be understood. I don't think so many people know this, but Chenrezig or Avalokiteshvara, as a historic note, is actually practiced all through Southeast Asia. In the Theravadan tradition, in Theravadan schools, because there's Mahayana practices within those schools. Sri Lanka is a center for Chenrezig. Well, of course, they don't call it Chenrezig there. It's a Tibetan name, Avalokiteshvara. Thailand, Cambodia, Vietnam, Burma, and of course, ancient India. And then, of course, Tibet, Mongolia, China, and Japan all practice Chenrezig. And Chenrezig, historically, in terms of the record of literature, was one of the first of all the meditational deities to be spoken about, enter into sutras and teachings, probably somewhere back in the 4th century, and the first record of Sanskrit writings of the name Avalokiteshvara, which is equivalent to Chenrezig, is somewhere around the 7th century, 6th, 7th century. So it's very ancient practice, both for meditation and for reverence. I can recollect back to my teenage years when we started to practice Vajrayana practices, Tantrayana practices. We were very fortunate to have, even before His Holiness the 16th Karmapa arrived in Toronto, the great meditation master, Cal Rinpoche, the meditation master of the Karmakagyu tradition. And I remember Cal Rinpoche saying to all of us during a teaching, that if you wish to have tantric teachings and you ask him for tantric teachings, make sure, something like this, it's a long time ago, but make sure that you have 600,000, 1 million, 600,000 equivalent to 1 million Chenrezig mantras done. Otherwise, there wouldn't be any transmission of Vajrayana practices. And the reason for that is he wanted a declaration of bodhicitta. You want a declaration of compassion and wisdom for all sentient beings strong enough to declare that one was ready to enter the path of Vajrayana. So we all got busy doing that. I was going to university and carrying a counter with me, or a little rosary, and quickly saying and practicing 600,000 Chenrezigs, so that we could participate in the next empowerments and teachings, which I remember what it was. It was White Tara in Toronto. So that was kind of like a requirement. I don't make that a requirement, but I do encourage many people to complete 600 or a million of Chenrezig. There are many forms of Chenrezig. There are so many forms of Chenrezig, and some of the forms we don't think about as Chenrezig: Hayagriva, six-arm Mahakala, sometimes referred to two-arm Mahakala, Red Chenrezig Yabyum Gyal Gyantso, white Chenrezigs, blue Chenrezigs, so many different varieties of Chenrezigs all the way through Asia have arisen. And so Chenrezig represents for so many beings great enlightened compassion. And in this way, Chenrezig is not only a bodhisattva, but considered, especially in Tibet, as a fully awakened being, a Buddha, who manifests great bodhisattva qualities, and therefore arises in the form of many beings, such as the 14th, His Holiness the 14th Dalai Lama, the Karmapas, many, many great masters are considered to be the physical emanations of Chenrezig. And Chenrezig can manifest in so many ways for the act of liberation of all six classes of sentient beings in all the three realms. And Chenrezig has the ability, embodies the ability to liberate beings to the individual or to the individual capacity of every single different sentient being. So it's quite extraordinary. So Chenrezig not only embodies great compassion, but extraordinary wisdom awareness to bring forth a full liberation in beings. And to quote Gampopa in the Jewel Order of Liberation, he says, practicing either method or wisdom awareness separately is the activity of Mara. So we see with Chenrezig, we have two hands. One is a crystal rosary and one is a lotus. And of course, the other two hands, sorry, four hands, other two hands are held in devotion, faith and confidence at the heart. But this this figure embodies both the relative four, the relative four Brahma Viharas, that is, loving kindness, relative compassion, sympathetic joy or universal joy, and equanimity, but at the same time with those four hands representing the highest qualities of pristine awareness and full Buddhahood. So it is quite something. So normally, most beings consider Chenrezig as the bodhisattva or the Buddha of compassion. But in Vajrayana, which of course Chenrezig is Vajrayana, Mahayana, there's no such thing as full Buddhahood or full compassion without profound wisdom. So that's very important, repeated by many, many beings, including Namjoon Rinpoche over and over again. So Chenrezig, or Avalokiteshvara, really, Chenrezig is again Tibetan, shows up in Buddhist texts by about the 6th or 7th century of the present era. And he's often in sutras where he is like a representative of the Buddha, a great bodhisattva who is asked or requested to teach Dharma. And of course, I think most of you, I hope all, most of you, are familiar with the Heart Sutra, where Avalokiteshvara is asked by Sariputra to teach, and he teaches on emptiness. And it's an extraordinary teaching where Avalokiteshvara teaches Sariputra how to look. And that, of course, is the name of Avalokiteshvara. It's right in the nature of the word, of the name, of the sort of the meaning of Chenrezig or Avalokiteshvara is exactly how to see, how to look, how to penetrate. And that's exactly what Avalokiteshvara does for Sariputra, to see the nature of all phenomena, not just the nature of empty or non-solid self, but the nature of all phenomenal appearance. So Chenrezig or Avalokiteshvara appears to liberate beings in many forms and colors, such as forearm Chenrezig, which we'll be practicing this weekend and for the next 2 weeks. 11 arm chenrezig, 1,000 arm chenrezig, red chenrezig standing, the stir of samsara's pit, which many of us have practiced, the form of red chenrezig yab yum, gyal gyamso, a chundi, which is a female form of chenrezig, sometimes a female form of chenrezig, which was actually practiced quite a bit in southern India and Sri Lanka, a hayagriva, which many people don't associate with chenrezig, but hayagriva is like a wrathful form of chenrezig, especially in the Dzogchen tradition. Pandaravasini, which we practiced this year, is a form of chenrezig. Six arm makkal, I mentioned before, and all kinds of nirmanakayas, His Holiness the 14th Karmapa, and so on. So many great masters are considered to be an embodiment of chenrezig. As a matter of fact, by tradition, all genuine lamas, all lamas that hold transmission and realization in Tibet have been considered to be, by tradition, an emanation of chenrezig. So chenrezig is central also to the Tibetan people, in that chenrezig is like the yidam, the deity that protects over all Tibetans, and of course now so many of us. So that's a very brief introduction to sort of the history of chenrezig. But what's very important to understand next is the name, because the name contains a feeling, the intent. It rolls in the intent of what we're going after and what we're practicing, what we're meditating on. And one of the names for Avalokiteshvara is Loktesvara. Instead of Avalokiteshvara, it's Loktesvara, which means literally Lord of the worlds. Not just of the world, but of worlds, loka. So when we break down the meaning of Avalokiteshvara in Sanskrit, which is a very ancient word, it's a combination of the prefix ava, A-V-A, which means down, but also means off and away. Now, the common translation is the Lord who looks down on the worlds. World is implied in loka. But also it's important to realize the word down can also mean away or to see further. So this is important to give the feeling of the embodiment, which we are going to try to embody chenrezig. And then we have Lokita, which is the past participle of lok, which means world, a loka, world, but also lok, L-O-K, or lok, Lokita, means to look, to observe, to notice, to behold, to see, perceive, to know, or to recognize. So the entire, if you wish, the pith of the teaching of chenrezig or Avalokiteshvara, as usual, is contained in the name. In some ways, all you would have to do is understand the name and the entire teaching and entire method is rolled up in chenrezig. That's really what it is. So how to see, how to look, how to notice, how to behold, how to make recognition. And Ishvara, Avalokiteshvara, Ishvara becomes in Sanskrit Eshvara, gets when you combine the two together into two words. But Ishvara means Lord, Master, Sovereign. And actually, sovereign is a really good word there, not to mean absolute ruler, but a being that governs or is a master of all. I think that's a beautiful word. If we don't look at the negative side of sovereigns, temporal sovereigns or relative sovereigns that aren't always awakened, this is an enlightened sovereign or enlightened master. So we can translate Avalokiteshvara, a common translation. I think the most common standard translation would be the Lord who gazes down at the world. That's probably the most common translation. It's an old translation. And of course, many people have gone at the translations, many, many translations, but that is a common one, Lord who gazes or looks down at the world. But there's many other ways of translating which are important. And one would be from other sources, one who perceives the voices in the world. One who perceives the voices of dukkha, that's implied, of the world. And I actually prefer this translation, which is a little bit more extensive, the Lord or Master who looks down and sees, recognizes the world, what the world is. And we certainly see that in the Heart Sutra, is Avalokiteshvara points out the nature of the world, of not just beings, but all phenomenal world systems, no matter what it is, no matter what class of being, to Sariputra. And then we have other translations. For instance, another meaning for Avalokiteshvara, you'll see this word is Padmapani. Sometimes you'll see the Yidam and the practice, you'll see it as Padmapani in Sanskrit. And that means holder of the lotus. Okay, that's another name. And there's other names in other countries. Kuan Yin, Konan, all kinds of China, Mongolia, they all have their different names. And actually, when it comes to the Chinese Guanyin, it's more to do with the sound of beings. The one who recognizes, hears the sound, the utterances of sentient beings. Of course, what is the utterance of sentient beings? Is lost in samsara. So that's what it means. Now, when it comes to the word Chenrezig, which is the translation into Tibetan, it has some different meanings there. The word chen or shvam is I, with an I, and ras is continuity. Zig is to look, to see. So one who is always looking, always or in a continuum of looking with the eye of compassion. That would be a free translation of Chenrezig. The continuum, the Lord or the being, the great being, who's always seeing or beholding with the eye of compassion. I'll take a pause there because we have to understand that the name, which is the embodiment of our practice, and I'm going to come back to this, and it's actually in the practice text. Avalokiteshvara in places is considered a being worthy of worship to gain merit and to gain requests. But from the Vajrayana point of view, from the practice of Dzogchen and Mahamudra, from the third turning of the Buddha's wheel, Chenrezig or Avalokiteshvara is in fact the ground of being. So the word, the actual name, embodies an awake mind that experiences fully all phenomena. So I want to make sure that's clear, because that's what we're trying to find out. That's what we're trying to discover. Now, when we have the word loka or lokita in the name, it refers to world, but it refers to sphere, place, location. But really what it means is any type of experience where a being experiences their location, space, world, inhabitation as the five aggregates. So I hope all of you who are listening in have had teachings or understand the five aggregates of the five aggregates of body or appearance, feeling, of sensation, or of perception, of the volitional states and consciousness. Whenever these five are considered to be solid, fixed, firm, then we have the experience of a world, beings inhabiting a world, solidity, and of course we're going to have clinging to that solidity, that fictional solidity, which is the experience of samsara, which is the experience of clinging. So this is very important because when Avalokiteshvara looks down, as explained in the Heart Sutra, he is looking down and beholding these six classes of beings experiencing the solidity and the non-empty nature to them. That is to them, the non-empty nature, even though it's empty, the non-empty nature of the five skandhas, or the five aggregates. So I hope that's making sense to everybody. Chenrezig does not see the solidity or the constructed nature or the firmness or the self nature, if you wish, or the self of the five aggregates. Chenrezig sees the empty nature of the five aggregates and therefore is able to help liberate beings, to show them the empty nature of the five aggregates, but the empty nature of all appearances. So that's it in a nutshell. That's actually what the practice, the meditation practice, is doing for us. It's going to bring us to both primordial awareness of the empty nature of all phenomena, and also it is helping us develop the skill and means, the method aspect of compassion to bring all beings into the path of liberation. And that is what we want to embody, and that's where we're headed. So the third point, we've just covered the first two for this weekend. The third point is refuge and bodhicitta. So if we turn to our text, this beautiful pith text by Orgon Nyun Dorje of the early 20th century, late 19th century, which has been taken. It's kind of the root text for his A Garland of Blue Lotuses, a beautiful garland or collection of Drikung sadhanas and empowerments. These 50. This is the root empowerment is Chenrezig, called the Chenrezig six syllable, or the six syllable sadhana. And the text opens with, in the beginning, go for refuge and generate bodhicitta, which is of course essential. And it opens with Kabne kuchu namla kapshu chi gonchi gewe dripa me jong tar de zen dangi du di ni samja roa yongi lama da gyu chik. So I take refuge in the three jewels, the sources of refuge. Just as victorious ones of the past perform wondrous acts, from now on I'll apply myself in the same manner. May I become a spiritual guide for all sentient beings. I take refuge in the three jewels, the sources of refuge. Just as victorious ones of the past perform wondrous acts, from now on I will apply myself in the same manner. May I become a spiritual guide for all sentient beings. So when we come to refuge, I think many of us, I could be included in that as well, many of us say it three times and we get through refuge and bodhicitta and we go to the really juicy stuff, you know, the visualization and the residing, abiding in effortless meditation. But there's a lot contained in these four lines, and I think it's really important to bring out some of the meaning. And it could be that there's a few of us, both online and in this room, maybe just a few, who would benefit including myself, benefit by hearing again the importance of refuge and bodhicitta. And some of the commentaries on Yidam practice have said things like this. When practicing Yidam practice, you don't necessarily say it just three times, but you say it until, and they always use an odd number. It's somehow considered if you use 2 or 4 or 6 or 8 or 10, there's a problem. You're supposed to use an uneven number, so 5, 7, 9. And you say the refuge until you really feel, and bodhicitta, prayer, it's all rolled into one. You say it until you really feel a heart feeling of going for refuge. So let's review that. And I think we could do this quite often, because sometimes we just say it, and we, at least, you know, sometimes I do say it and just pass on. But it's very important to really engender a feeling of confidence, trust, and faith. But confidence, trust, and faith in what? And you'll see that Chenrezig has hands folded at the heart with a beautiful blue jewel, a beautiful mind jewel at the heart. And what does that mean? Well, utter confidence in the liberation of beings, utter confidence in Buddha nature, utter confidence in the three jewels of the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And I believe this is the biggest difficulty with beings, not meditation, really. People come sometimes and say, how do I meditate? It might actually be better to say, how do you take refuge? Or have you taken refuge? If you really fully take refuge, you would have meditation. Naturally. This is my feeling. The moment that you really take refuge is the moment that you are truly meditating and in the Dharma. So to recognize the Buddha is to recognize both a great historic figure, but is to recognize the lineage of fully awakened beings and have trust in full awakening. And for some, I think certainly born in the West, this is very difficult, to actually trust in full awakening, that all beings can be fully awakened. We all have the right and capacity to do that. And then the trust, confidence in all the Dharma teachings and all the Dharma writings of fully awakened beings, especially of the Buddha, all the suttas and sutras, and of course the tantras of Dharma, which are considered, they call it the 84,000 different expositions of Dharma for 84,000 different types of beings. It's extraordinary. And having confidence that these teachings are utterly precious and utterly works of genius, Dharma genius. And then the Sangha are those people who have taken the different types of vows, the Pratimoksha vows, the lay vows, the five precepts, eight precepts, the 10 precepts, the 250 or 300 precepts of monks and nuns, and of course the tantric precepts of Tantrika. And then, of course, the word Sangha can also mean the teacher and the retinue of practitioners. And, of course, the word Sangha, when it comes to taking refuge, all really means taking refuge in the Mahasangha, or beings that have experienced awakening and can help others point them in the right direction to liberation. And, of course, the three jewels here in this prayer represent the three inner aspects of refuge, of the guru, the yidam, or the meditational deity, and the dakini. So they're inseparable. The guru is the yidam is the guru, the dakini is the guru, the dakini is the yidam, and so on. These qualities of blessing, accomplishment, and removing obstacles is called the inner aspect of the three jewels, the inner aspect of refuge, and we need confidence that blessings can flow, and accomplishment, liberation, accomplishment, cities can happen, and the dakinis freeing us of obstacles. And then number three, the confidence in the hidden or secret level, the innate level of Buddha bodies, of the Dharmakaya, the Sambhogakaya, and Nirmanakaya, which is often beyond the ordinary experience of most beings. It will be. But this is actually the ground of Buddha nature. And then number four, the suchness quality, the absolute quality of Buddha nature, the most secret, if you wish, or most hidden, which is Buddha nature, pervasive Buddha nature. So we understand that when it says in the text, taking refuge in the three jewels, we're taking refuge in all four qualities, not just one. We're not just taking refuge in the outer, we're not just taking refuge in the absolute, but we're taking refuge in all four aspects as one nature. And sometimes we take refuge in one aspect or another more depending on the practice or the quality or state of mind that we're in. Now, it must be understood, because some texts say that, some sadhana practices or some meditation text will say that right from the very beginning. Chenrezig is the embodiment of all the sources of refuge. That's key. That must be understood from the beginning. Is when it says we take refuge in the three jewels, when we practice sadhana, when we practice a means of accomplishment, we practice tantrayana and vajrayana, the yidam, which is the guru, which is the dakini, which is the absolute nature, Chenrezig, which we have intrinsic to our mind, we are taking refuge in Chenrezig, which represents and is, in fact, all those four aspects of refuge. So we see in the text, it says that we take refuge in the three jewels, the sources of refuge. Next line, just as the victorious ones, the Buddhas and great bodhisattvas, of the past performed wondrous acts. Now these are the wondrous acts refer to the relative and the absolute cities, the relative and absolute accomplishment. But the wondrous act is the wondrous act is the ability and the happening of beings awakening, discovering liberation. So to me, maybe I'm just being very classic, I think so, is this is the most wondrous gift and the most wondrous act that there is beings discovering the awake mind, beings discovering awakeness, beings discovering freedom. That is it. And of course, Buddhas and Bodhisattvas perform the wondrous act of great compassion by pointing out, by giving pith instruction, empowerment, by giving teachings, and liberating beings from their difficult karma, altering karma. So the wondrous act is twofold. The wondrous act is to the skill and means of helping beings and freeing beings of entangled karmic patterns, which is really what's in the way. As Namjoon Rinpoche said, that's what's in the way, not meditation. If the karmic patterns are freed, meditation flows. All you have to do is just point it out and the being will practice, will unfold. What's in the way? Karmic patterns. Then number two, the pith instructions, which lead directly over time, can be instantaneously or directly over time, to the discovery of innate pristine freedom. That is, that the mind and all experience is completely, utterly free of greed, hatred, delusion, pride, and jealousy, and is in fact Buddha wisdom. So as Namjoon Rinpoche said a number of times, the highest accomplishment, the highest psychic power, the highest miraculous power is compassion, is great compassion to bring beings into the path. That doesn't mean that relative cities or relative miraculous powers aren't used. They can be very important for all beings, like healing, like medical healing, healing beings, levitation could be very important, passing through walls, or running very quickly, all kinds of things, but maybe even traveling to the sun or to the moon, riding on rainbows. All these can be very important, but nothing is as important as the accomplishment of full liberation because of its ability to liberate so many beings. So this leads us to the motive, of why we practice, and the motive of Chenrezig is to bring all beings to full liberation. Why? Because Buddhas and great bodhisattvas have the ability to liberate so many beings and so deeply and completely. So this is the second line, just. So when it says just, that means we. So just as Buddhas and great bodhisattvas did, we are going to try to do the same thing from now on. The third line, from now on, I will apply myself in the same manner as Buddhas and great bodhisattvas in twofold bodhicitta, that is the aspiration for complete liberation of self and others, and the actual act of liberating oneself and other beings. So I hope that's really clear. So we have two. One is we have to have the intent and the wish to liberate all sentient beings, including ourselves. So therefore, when we practice, all Vajrayana practice, all Deity Yoga practice, every single being that we can imagine of all six classes, hell beings, animal beings, hungry ghosts, humans, demigods, jealous gods, and complete godlike beings, all those class of beings are going for refuge and generating bodhicitta with us. They're in the room, so to speak. The best way to practice? All beings in the room with us are actually doing this practice with us, not just the folks on the on Zoom, and not just the folks in the room, but all sentient beings, as many as we can imagine, are in this together. And why? Because that's what all beings really want, even if they don't know it. Beings want freedom, and they will try to get it in every way they can. Even if it's utterly misguided, they will try. And the second one is the application of activity, of course. So when we take on the body, the speech, and the mind of Chenrezig or Avalokiteshvara, we are actually not just wishing for liberation, but we're engaging in the activity of liberating beings. We'll come to that. Okay, so that's the twofold. There we go. So there's a lot in this, a very short prayer. From now on, I will apply myself in the same manner. I will become a great bodhisattva. I will have the confidence and trust to act like a fully awakened being. And then the last line, may I become a spiritual guide for all sentient beings. So will I attain, and will I gather? So sometimes if we use the word attain, it feels like it's too much of a task. How could I ever attain in this life full Buddhahood? Never occur to you? That's a big task, isn't it? How could I ever become a Maha Bodhisattva? How could I ever liberate so many beings? And therefore you get defeated and say, I'll just visualize and say some mantras. But if you change the word attain or aim to attain to gather, I will gather. I will make effort to unceasingly try to gather all the qualities that would allow me to lead beings and for myself to attain great wisdom and compassion, just like Chenrezig, just like Shakyamuni Buddha, just like one's root teachers and the great gurus, the great Mahasiddhas. If you say the word gather, I will gather, like you gather a mineral collection, or you gather all animals, like in a zoo. You gather all the flowers and plants that you could ever imagine in your garden, but you slowly gather all the great qualities and imbue them in your being, then you have, I believe, a very different quality of, as it says here in this text, becoming a spiritual guide to all sentient beings. You may then say, well, how could I ever do that? I'm going to fail. It's too big a task. How could I ever be like the Dalai Lama or His Eminence Ajahn Rinpoche? How could I ever be like that? And or a Namgyal Rinpoche, how could I ever be like that? But actually, we have many hidden qualities. And if we gather, I believe that's a much more genuine practice. If you systematically gather, as opposed to just wait, may I become fully awakened. So when we practice sadhana, it's called the means of accomplishment, we are gathering the merit, the wisdom, the insight and compassion to be a spiritual guide. Well, I think I've covered. So one last comment on that, may not be the last, but I think it is at the moment, is when we practice Chenrezig, especially practicing Chenrezig, the commentaries are very clear on this point. We visualize and we try to see all six classes of beings around us. And if you know your biology, that means that most of those beings, 99.9% of those beings, are actually microscopic. And they're everywhere. So they're in the air, they're in your lungs, they're in the water, they're everywhere. So sentient beings fill all of space. They are wandering through all of space. So just try to imagine that all of space, every single bit of space, is filled with sentient beings. But every single bit of space, from the point of view of Mahamudra and Dzogchen realization, is filled with awakeness. It's pervasive awakeness, not wandering. And you should have no doubt about it. So that is refuge. So that is what holding the, when Chenrezig holds the blue crystal at the heart, the blue gemstone at the heart, that means no doubt, no unconfidence, no mistrust about pervasive bodhicitta, pervasive awakeness everywhere in space, and pervasive beings wandering in space, but actually they don't know it, but they are the nature of Chenrezig. This is refuge. This is real refuge. And the path is miraculous, except for the awakening in the lotus. In the lotus of Chenrezig is miraculous. That's called awakening into a pure land. Sukhavati beings, when you appear in a pure land, it is said that you appear in a lotus. You get born from a lotus. Of course, a lotus is symbolic of a womb. You get born in a lotus womb. But one has to have the feeling that one gets, that there's causes and conditions for awakening, even if it is miraculous. Okay, so that's number three. Could go on for much more. But now we come to the visualization of the deity or the Idam. Ah. Chonna mingme tangi ningsa jingje sa pere tengdu riyi tongdu le. Getchu dangni papa. Pakarsadang Longku Jesong Sangche Tamorjar. Otro yeshe chandra gyur me ching wang le wang gu ring da gur gen yur nang si kur de kun zak cho pa trin pak me rang nang dang pe la la cho do ne ma cho kun ze re pe long kunang chungdru ragsam lat la to tungkar da ting hril nang tre kor gya cho ding du ro we drib na jang nang se dorje sum du long drop you. And then Om Mani Padme Hum. So some commentary on the visualization. So some of you are going to ask the question, I suspect, is this front arising or self arising? Do we arise in the self form just spontaneously, or do we do front visualization above the crown? Anything you like, actually, but it's actually we already are Chenrezig, so we're appearing that way. So let's go through the text, and it's so rich. Let's unfold that. So that is number the fourth part for this weekend. So we start with the symbol, the seed syllable of emptiness, of pervasive, of Buddha nature and emptiness. And it says, all phenomena are objectless. They are the creative energy of emptiness and compassion. Of course, a very important instruction of Dzogchen. That in fact, that all experience, when it says phenomena, it means all experience. Every single experience we have is really not a concept, not an idea, not a thing, but in fact is the creative, really the, in its essence form, or its heart form, if you wish. At the heart of it is the creative, the unceasing play, if you wish, of emptiness and compassion. But when it's colored with habit patterns, it is considered to be manifestations of greed, hatred, delusion, pride, and jealousy. Now, when it says all phenomena are objectless, because we're being asked to do this visualization, we're being asked to think and feel this way, this word objectless also means conceptless. No phenomena, no experience, no thing in any way has an actual concept. Just like we have names, even though we have names, that's not us. It's a label. This lamp here, oops, out of the view here. This lamp, this dorje, this actual dorje, in no way, anywhere in it, has the word dorje or vajra. And if you were to look for brass, let's say it was made of brass, which it probably is, some sort of brass. If you were to look for brass, you would never find the word brass inside here. You wouldn't even find metal. Unless, of course, someone got in there with an electron microscope, which they can do, and actually print, carve into it and say, Vajra, you found the Vajra. And you can write it with molecules. You could actually write it with molecules, electron microscope. They have those kinds of techniques. So no matter how far you look into phenomena, you will see that there is no solidity. They're empty of any concepts or even thingness. In fact, everything that manifests to the mind is the creative energy, the cell of the spaciousness and the openness of all the universes. And pervasive compassion. So, in that sense, everywhere we look and everywhere we have our five senses is, in fact, the creative display or the play, the light play of pervasive awakeness. It just tells us exactly where we're going. And then it says above. Does it say above what? No, just above is a lotus and moon. So brilliant, absolutely brilliant white. And there appears a Hri. And the Hri is the kind of life energy seed syllable, but it's representing the five pristine wisdoms. And it's emanating and gathering back light. Well, this is a short, pithy sadhana. So what one does is one emanates light. We glow with light. We see this lotus and this moon disk with a Hri. And from the Hri, there is light, white light or rainbow lights, right? White light or rainbow light going everywhere to all the sources of refuge and all the awakeness pervading space, not just up there, but all 360 degrees pervading space. And the longer text will say something like this: and all the awakened beings are pleased, they're happy to see this. And therefore, they send back light, a radiant light, and it goes into the Hri, which is our mind's nature. It goes into our awareness, our primordial awareness. And that instantly, without any hesitation, becomes Chenrezig. So this is the Dharmakaya vibrating with a wish to have compassion, and from that arises effortlessly, spontaneously, without any contrivance, without any doubt, the manifestation of Chenrezig. So it says here, from this in an instant, which means without fabrication, without constructs, without doubt, open, unhindered, one becomes the exalted one, becomes the Lord, Avalokiteshvara, becomes Chenrezig, radiant white, that is like light on a fresh snowfall, light on a mountain, that kind of radiance of white light on leaves or on snow, you know, this kind of brilliance, this extraordinary. And this is what we want. Complete with Sambhogakaya, completely liberated ornaments, gold and jewels, and the palms of the main hands folded in devotion at the heart center. Remember, this is a pith text, so it's not giving every little detail. So let's go back again to this. If you suddenly appear as Mahakala, that's okay. If it's really fresh in your mind and you suddenly appear as a red Chenrezig, that's okay. Because Chenrezig has so many different potential forms. This is forearm Chenrezig, so we come back to that. But the attitude, so I want to give the intent, because it's Dzogchen, this is a Dzogchen Mahamudra text. The attitude that will allow this to happen, really happen, is the view and perspective that our mind, our nature, is already Avalokiteshvara. We need to get out of the way and let Avalokiteshvara come. Now, if we're practicing for mental stability, and we're practicing for, and we're in a longer retreat, and we want to practice tranquility meditation through the generation of visualization, then of course we want a perfect visualization, steady, complete, clear. You can see the eyebrows, you can see each hair in an eyebrow. You could stick out your tongue and see just Chenrezig's tongue. If you could see your tongue, yes. You could see every pore of Chenrezig, and this will happen if you practice long retreat. You can see everything, every single detail. But here, the emphasis is a spontaneous arising because you trust that the ground of your being and all sentient beings is in fact Chenrezig. Therefore, if you were to get completely out of the way, not let go, step aside, let loose, unbind, be free, uncontrived, unconstrained, then you would actually, not you, there would be Chen Reizi appearing. And that's actually usually how it happens. When you really step out of the way completely, there will be Chen Reizi right in front of your face. There will be Chen Reizi in the body appearing. Spontaneously and effortlessly. Why? Not because you contrived it, not because you visualized it, but because that's your nature. If you make that, if you have that discovery for real, called the pure appearance body, if you have that for real, you will never, ever again doubt, I hope, ever again doubt that Chen Reizi or Avalokiteshvara, all the Adams, are actually your pure mind, pure, primordially pure mind of awareness, body of awareness, speech of awareness. This is what it means. This is the Mahamudra Dzogchen perspective of experience, is the primordial purity of Chen Reizi will happen when there's non-fabrication, when one steps out of the way. That doesn't mean that we don't build up a visualization. So I'm not saying that. Okay, I want to be clear on that. That doesn't mean don't ever visualize. Okay? I'm not saying that. But here, it assumes you can already visualize very well. And you're letting it occur. You're letting it happen. Bright, clear, effortless. Yeah. Okay. So hands folded in trust. Hands folded in faith. The lower right and left hands hold a crystal rosary and lotus flower respectively. The crystal rosary representing compassion, skill and means, the method aspect of liberation. And the lotus flower representing the wisdom aspect, the lotus, the blossom, purity, really meaning the womb. The womb of potential, the womb of primordial awareness, the womb of Tathagata, Tathagata Garbha, Garbha meaning womb. And of course, the lotus. Why the lotus? The lotus is picked because the lotus is a plant that can grow and flower in the murkiest, muddiest, polluted, fouled waters. That's what it means. Out of the mud, out of polluted, tainted water, comes the pure womb of enlightened nature. So that's what that means. The crystal rosary, of course, is the sign of infinity, is the continuity of Tantra, is the continuity of Buddha nature. It's pure, it's crystal, it's Vajra. It can't be cracked, it can't be it can't be burnt. Of course, you can burn a diamond, but you can't burn enlightened mind. It's adamantine. So this crystal rosary, I would bring a crystal rosary, but it happens to have broken the, that's a very good sign, the cord broke some time ago. So, but one can use it. It's lovely to use a crystal rosary. And of course, it represents holding or manifesting or bringing beings, the unchanging, infinite, unborn nature of awake mind. So, crystal rosary and a lotus in left hand. The two feet are crossed in the full lotus, and one appears in a mass of five colored lights. That's very important. So there's all around us, there's twinkling radiances of spheres and strings of five colored primordial light, sparkling, radiant, clear, filling everywhere. And that's when it says a mass of five colored light, it doesn't just mean in the body, but it means all around us and all sentient beings everywhere is pervaded by spheres and strings and cords and lines and bubbles, tigglies of rainbow light, complete freedom and primordial awareness. In the three places, forehead, throat, and heart are the three syllables, Om Ahung, representing the three Buddha bodies of Dharmakaya. Well, here we're starting with Nirmanakaya, Sambhogakaya, and Dharmakaya. That's our nature, our three places. In fact, that is our real nature. And from these seed syllables in the heart, light emanates, inviting the wisdom beings, the true awakened beings throughout space and in us, of course, and they dissolve inseparably into us. So this this visualization here is just like in Wangkor, is you visualize an infinite number of mandalas or awakened beings, chenrezis. You can visualize every color chenrezi, but chenrezis holding empowerment flasks, chenrezis coming in like snowflakes, melting into warm or hot rocks, or melting into a lake of your mind, and you really try to visualize millions or hundreds of millions of chenrezis perfectly formed, coming in and melting you, softening you into chenrezi, just like melting into a lake. So this is a extraordinary experience, and that's what that means. So you feel that you are blessed, deeply, deeply blessed. Then it says the empowerment devas, those are the chenrezis, holding empowerment vases, they bestow the abhisheka, they bestow the wangkur, the higher sprinkling. And the lord of the family, that is Amitabha, the lord of the Buddha family, the wisdom family, becomes your crown ornament. So now you see that you are chenrezi, of course, you're completely transformed in chenrezi, you're sparkling white. And right above your crown here appears a brilliant red Amitabha with the two hands crossed like this, and in the lap, fold the lap, just four finger widths below the navel, and brilliant, brilliant ruby red, transparent. This is the wisdom Buddha of discriminating awareness. And that's because chenrezi is of that lineage, of that family. Whatever appears, next in the text, whatever appears in samsara and nirvana, both, this is Mahamudra, Dzogchen view, samsara is nirvana, nirvana is samsara. They are of the same primordial nature, just seen as two different things depending on one's view. They become limitless clouds of offerings, such as Samantabhadra made. These are the outer, inner, secret offerings that the Bodhisattva Samantabhadra made in his quest to become awakened, of making infinite offerings, which we can speak about more later. These we offer to the spontaneously manifesting pure deva, the wisdom beings. So you offer all this up to awakeness. Have the ability to offer every richness, relative and transcendental, that you could imagine to the wisdom beings. And you say, why would I need to do this? Because you actually have to manifest it. That word manifest there is correct. And spontaneously also means without contrivance, without connivance, without wish, I will get something in return. So we offer infinite clouds of pure offerings, of relative and transcendental, to the wisdom beings throughout space. That is, we're offering it to the continuum of awakeness. Then it says, we praise the deva, the wisdom being, one's own mind. So this is now recognizing that all of this experience that we're having, it's lovely, someone put up a looks like a mandala of Dorje Palmo, but it's a mandala of looks like a Kabbalistic mandala. That's quite interesting up there on the screen, is there, instead of their face. It's interesting. So one recognizes that everything that we're experiencing is the wisdom Buddha's mind. Our mind must be that mind. This is the recognition. Right? I praise the Dewa. And through praising the Dewa, which means also recognizing the Dewa, we recognize our own mind, which is the magical display of the all-illuminating expanse of awareness, great perfection, primordially uncontrived. There's not one contrivance, fabrication, conceptual construction in it. It's the ground of everything, the ground of all phenomena, all experience. So one of the most extraordinary declarations and instructions of great perfection. That's what we want to discover. And then in the heart is a moon disk. In our heart, which is Chenrezig's heart, is a moon disk, a clear full moon. Above it, you see a Hri, a syllable, which represents the five wisdom Buddhas. It is encircled like a garland, encircled by the mantra garland, the seed syllables, and it makes offerings to the victorious ones, the awakened ones, and then the awakened ones send back all that light, send back their blessings, and by that it purifies the two obscurations of beings, of all sentient beings, that is the delusions, the emotional delusions, and the obstructions, the knowledge obstructions to understand and come to omniscience, full Buddhahood. They're purified. We want to feel that on the return of these blessings, we are purifying both the emotional obstructions and the knowledge obstructions of understanding phenomena. Then the text says, whatever appears is spontaneously established as the three Vajras. So here's where the union of a generation stage or a visualization stage is inseparable with the completion stage through these instructions, where in the appearance of the Adam is the completion stage. So, as taught by Loan Torimpache, when it says established as the three Vajras, when he gave commentary on this text in India, it was 2013, October 12th, actually. Not October 11th. October 11th is when he gave the empowerment, which was also Namjoon Rinpoche's anniversary of his birthday. Very auspicious day. The next day, I believe it was the next day or that next afternoon, he gave a commentary and gave a reading transmission of this text, and that is when we translated it. So the three Vajras is as explained by Antar Rinpoche at that time, not just the three Buddha bodies, but the three Vajras of understanding that every appearance is Chenrezig. Chenrezig is the appearance. No matter what appears to your mind is Chenrezig. Whatever sound is heard is Chenrezig's sound. Whatever is of mind is Chenrezig's mind. So it's all Chenrezig. Everything appears, is heard, and is experienced as Chenrezig. And of course, these are also the three empowerments: appearance emptiness, sound emptiness, and concept mind, bliss mind, and appearance emptiness. So these are the three Vajras and also the three empowerments. And then one recites the mantra of Chenrezig, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. And because of time, because I like to go through this and actually do some little bit of meditation, I'm going to finish with the reading transmission. But tomorrow I'm going to go extensively into the mantra, the recitation of the mantra, and the meaning of the mantra, because it's very extensive. So that will be, let's see, part five here. Yeah. And to continue on, so we recite the mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. And then we continue on with the text. Hari. Gojo Yidru Chodri Gyamso Chokore Rangpa Rabjam Lata Lala To Getro Gampa Chichi Zompa So Zopa Shela Sangpe Grotub So. And then we make ocean-like clouds of both real and mentally created offerings. We praise the Dewa, we praise the wisdom being, the all-encompassing purity of both samsara and nirvana, or gathering all together. I'll give commentary on this later, tomorrow. We beg your forbearance for all faults, delusions, and mistakes we may have made. Please be patient with us and grant us the accomplishment of purity. That means full Buddhahood. Purity there means full, complete Buddhahood. Then we recite the mantra of Vajrasattva, the 100-syllable mantra, three times. Then it says in the text, Nandra Grisu Lange Choku Rangurang Yeshe Rupa Jamlepa Zabsang Neldru Jampo Yamlen La Yurme Chungi Digli Rochu Sok. Appearances have the nature of the Dewa, sound has the nature of the mantra, and awareness has the nature of the Dharmakaya, that is, the three Vajras. They are infinite as a display of Kayas, of Buddha bodies, and wisdom. Then the text says, undifferentiated in the practice of the profound and secret great yoga, Mahayoga, may they become of one taste in the Tigli at the heart. Then the text says, as the dedication aspiration, Nimmo dele sende le gnime gongyang dele sheng nishu tangdu dele pa konchuk songgi drenju shu. May the day be well, the night be well, and the midday hours bring happiness too. Here and now may the three jewels grant that day and night always be well. And the text finishes with a colophon, which we'd be auspicious to read today. It finishes with, this was put together how it arose by the one called Jedrung of Lo, Lo Nudin Dorje, 1849 to 1902, in response to the request of both the chant master and the disciplinarian at the monastery, saying that for the followers of Drikung Rinchenpel, the followers of Jitun Sungon, in Tibet, who was the so-called Nargajuna on the mountain of Sri Parvata in India, to chant the prayers of the ocean-like noble assembly. A practice like this that is easy to do and convenient to carry around in the fashion of a kusulu, that is a yogin, was necessary. By this virtue, may all beings swiftly attain Buddhahood. So there it is. There's the reading transmission and some instructions for practice. And tomorrow, as I said, go into parts 5, 6, 7, and 8, because I've divided into these teachings for this weekend into 8 parts. What I'll do the following weekend after that, I have no idea, but anyways, be teachings on something. Something will arise, but we'll continue with that. So, let us practice together. Let's take a little pause, drink, stand up if you wish, and then we'll come back. We have scheduled a half an hour, and we'll do a brief sadhana practice together.